Welcome back to the Roundtable as we welcome David King Dunaway, professor of English, oral historian, and author whose books and radio series have brought cultural history to life for decades. Known for his deeply researched biographies and his work in public radio, including right here in WAMC, Dunaway turns his curiosity to a most familiar invention. It's one that he is wearing and one that I am wearing, eyeglasses. He has a brand new book out. It's called A Four-Eyed World, How Glasses Changed the Way We See. He offers the first cultural history of eyewear, tracing how lenses have shaped science and society, media, and our very notions of sight. Far from a niche topic, the book mixes fascinating historical episodes, cultural analysis, and Dunaway's own reflections on living with and without his glasses. It is a great pleasure to welcome David King Dunaway to the Roundtable this morning. Thank you very much for being with us. What a delight to have you on the program.
It's a pleasure, and what a thoughtful introduction.
Well, thank you. Give us a sense of how what we have on our face became of interest to you to want to write about it and to spend so much time researching.
Well, I guess I should start by saying I'm someone who couldn't cross the street without glasses. I've been wearing them since I was five. I've had all kind of mishaps that many people who wear glasses when they're children will understand and be familiar with. And one day, I got tired of writing biographies of famous people like Aldous Huxley and Pete Seeger, well known in your communities there in the Northeast, and decided maybe I could write a biography of the device that many of us keep closest, the something we touch for those of us who have to wear them all the time, last thing at night and first thing in the morning.
When you look at this history, I would assume on something like this, is there a very definitive start date in the sense of when you look at the history of, okay, this is where we can date this back to?
Well, that's a great question. And the answer, I'm afraid, is no. We have some general ideas. Glasses were devised in about 750 years ago in Italy, probably in Pisa. And the reason was simple, and many of your listeners will understand this point. Reading, when you reach, I'd say Middle Ages or even a later, becomes a challenge with the eyes that you were born with. The lens in our eye becomes a little stiffer. The ciliary muscles that allow us to pull focus from near and far lose their power. And so we need reading glasses. Now, pity the poor monk who spent all his days copying manuscripts in the Middle Ages and who felt his eyes slowly deteriorating and felt he needed something else. Now, back in those days, they had reading stones. You could scuttle them across the page and read one word at a time. Somewhere, sometime, somebody got the idea of putting two of these reading stones together and lifting them up so they could see the world.
You make so many interesting points in the book, and one of them is of how much glasses are a part of our culture, and yet it's still something that, myself included, that if we are to be photographed or if we are to present ourselves, we'll often want to remove our glasses if we are not wearing contact lenses. What does that say about it? It is, I mean, even when we go to get a prescription, if we're getting a prescription and not wearing cheaters, the word is that they are corrective lenses. So just that idea is that they're correcting something that's wrong. Why does that bury itself so deep into us, do you think?
Well, it Your question picks up from right where I stopped, as a matter of fact, because as soon as somebody figured out a way to use these reading stones to see, somebody else decided it was a bad idea and denounced it. This originally came from the Catholic Church, which was all powerful during the Middle Ages, and their take on glasses was that we got the eyes God thought we deserved, and any effort to fix them, to correct them, was sketchy to the point of being diabolical. In fact, some of the first drawings of the devil show him in spectacles. So, starting from the 13th century, we have had prejudice against wearing glasses. Now, it takes different forms in different eras. In the beginning, glasses were not widely distributed. Only the rich and the church leaders could afford them, and that created some resentment for all of us who kind of need glasses in order to function, particularly when we reach a certain age. Then, in the 17th and 18th century, so-called eye doctors said, well, maybe it's obvious that two eyes work better than four. We shouldn't allow just anybody to get glasses. We should be the ones that make that decision. And that continued into the 19th century. But the most persistent, pervasive glasses shaming came about against women, and it really started at the beginning of the 19th century. Here, we find women hesitant to put them on, in part because they were expensive, but also because they revealed a physical defect in some ways, particularly for those who had to wear them all the time. They revealed aging after a certain point, which many women were not eager to display. And well, it's been consistent ever since then. We have a newspaper saying in the 20th century, even not so very long ago, that women wearing glasses in public is like brandishing a wooden leg in public. And it just has gone on since then. You know, it's nice to think that glasses shaming is something from the distant past. But if you go into a restaurant tonight or a bar and you look around, you'll see people start to take selfies, and instantly people will rip them off until the photo's taken and then put them back on again. Now, a famous American humorist, Dorothy Parker, wrote, "Men seldom make passes at girls who wear glasses." I think things have improved. But we still live with the notion that girls and women and men have been told that glasses make them look unattractive and they might drive away suitors. We have a lot more choices today. In fact, 16 million people wear frames with clear lenses as a fashion accessory. But it's only 3 years ago that women stopped being able to be fired in Japan for wearing glasses to work. They said glasses don't go with a kimono.
David King Dunaway is our guest. The name of the new book is A Four-Eyed World: How Glasses Changed the Way We See, and the book is published by Bloomsbury. So, my understanding, you write about this in the book, that you decide to experience a week without glasses, and glasses that you point out you have needed all your life. Was that your decision that you wanted to do that?
Yes, it was. And some people are going to think this crazy, and I wouldn't blame you. You could fall and hurt yourself.
Yes.
You could have unusual culinary experiments, such as I did, trying to cook on a stove you can't see. I decided to put them aside to see, as people did before glasses, and to test what it means to see on my own without any help. I had the expected results: accidents small and large, injuries, isolation, both visual and personal. And maybe it was a crazy idea. Yet those of us who are nearsighted, very nearsighted, can see at least a little. We're not likely to mistake the pantry door for the garage and end up with a motor oil omelet. I was still able to read a book or newspaper held inches away from my face. It was still me, just living in the land of blur.
And what insight did that give you as far as the importance of glasses and I would assume just the overall idea that it must have been a relief to be able to put them back on again.
Oh, it sure was. That's one of the things I learned, is how critical to our lives glasses are and how easily we overlook them, disregard them, just say, well, my glasses work today or they don't, so I better get another pair. But I see people who wear glasses, particularly those of you listening out there who've been wearing glasses since you were a child. I see us as a community. I even looked for a word in the dictionary to describe us. I couldn't find one, and I came up with this word, glasser. And Joe, you're a glasser. And so I want to turn the table for a moment and ask, how would you manage without your glasses? Could you drive or work?
No. No, and it's only gotten progressively worse over time. I didn't need glasses until I hit probably my mid-40s. And now, which I guess is pretty common, right? I get that sense in the book that's often common. And now I'm at a point where, yeah, I can live without them.
Well, that's why I went through the process that I did, to understand how our lives would change if somehow we no longer had access to glasses. I moved into a world of shapes and colors, but no clear, distinct vision. Did I trip? Did I put down my teacup and then spend half an hour looking for it so I didn't drop kick it down the hall? Absolutely true. If you wear glasses, you might try this simple experiment. Assuming you're in a place that's comfortable and safe, not walking the streets or driving, obviously, you could take those glasses off. And the first thing that would hit you is, wow, I can't see. What is all this stuff around me? But then you would begin experiencing how you see without compensation, without correction. You would find yourself in a new world. Maybe it wouldn't seem very pleasant for a while, but I like to think that there is some value in uncorrected sight. Again, safety, security is critical. But after all, these are the eyes you have. These are the eyes without any intervention from the world. It might be interesting for you to experience what your eyes are like and go through a small period without help and see on your own.
One of the things that you read about, and I'm interested as we start to wrap up here, is the idea of the technology of glasses and how that has changed? Because we think back to what you were describing at the beginning of our conversation, and it's really not all that far from what we originally had, but obviously we've gotten better getting prescriptions right, getting the right glasses for the correction that needs to be done. And that technology is rather fascinating.
Well, it is, and it's just about to undergo a quantum leap forward or backward, depending on your perspective. Yesterday, there was an article in the New York Times that talked about people wearing the new generation of smart glasses who were going into restaurants and filming everything they see and streaming them eating their meal as an influencer, as a food writer, and not telling anyone about it.
Sign me up. Yep.
And last week it was presented that Meta, which makes these the most popular smart glasses by far, they sold 7 million pairs of them last year. And these are glasses which do record, which can stream. They're about to add facial recognition to their glasses. Now, what does this mean in practice? Well, I'll tell you, it means that anyone passing you by on the street with these glasses recording can stream everything they hear and see. Now, that's smart glasses, but that's also in spectacles. Wouldn't it be creepy if somebody could actually use that facial recognition and the other data that's soon to be loaded into them to determine your marital status, your phone number, your social security number, your bank balance, and on we go. So smart glasses are useful in many ways. They allow you to overlay a hologram if you're assembling furniture, and they allow a surgeon to stream his job to a medical school class. Many positive sides to it. But we live in an era where technology outspeeds our ability to regulate it. And I'm particularly worried about smart glasses for the reasons I just said.
And that's a different reason for wearing them than to make it easier for us to see and to make sure that we're not squinting. I mean, that adds a dimension to it, right?
Well, you know, poor vision is associated with a lot of things, including dementia, just the same way poor hearing is connected with this. There will still be regular glasses sold that will help you see just fine. The temptation, though, is going to be, perhaps in defense, to buy a pair of these smart glasses to figure out who is that guy in the corner staring at me intently through those funny looking glasses.
And now when you think about the research that you've done for this book and understanding more about eyeglasses, what do you think it's important that we take away from the experience for those of us who wear them, for those of us who don't, and maybe will soon?
Yes, many people will be wearing smart glasses without correction. Absolutely right, for the reasons that we've just said. I think the most important thing is to reconsider the role they've played in your life. Because let's face it, a lot of people were called four eyes growing up, were teased, even bullied like I was, for thick lenses that I carted around. And, you know, those stereotypes sometimes get internalized, make you feel a little worse about yourself. Maybe you're a little bit of a loser because you need these thick glasses. Well, that's where my book starts in some sense. It's the struggle to see. And beyond that, the struggle to be comfortable with yourself, to accept yourself, to realize, yes, well, maybe my eyeglasses are needed because I don't see so well, but But that's not a big deal. And it's changing. People are getting more comfortable about it. So, what I want people to take away is the notion of reconsidering what it meant for them to wear glasses and how they feel about it today.
The name of the book, A Four-Eyed World, How Glasses Changed the Way We See. The book is published by Bloomsbury. David King Dunaway is the author and has been our guest this morning. David, I thank you very much for being with us. A delight to speak with you, and I thank you very much for sharing with us this morning.
My pleasure.
Be well. Thank you very much. Again, the name of the book is A Four-Eyed World by David King Dunaway. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.